Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's go,
man. I'm feeling great.
I'm doing great.
Happy Tuesday to you, boys and girls. One question, and one question only. How do you feel?
Well, I feel good, and I'm doing well.
That's all that really matters. We come to you live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts—better parts, better prices every day.
What you think about that, DA?
I think it's a great day to be alive. Is what I think. It's a trash Tuesday, so you can hit us up on the phones or on the tweets on who or what you'd like to trash. Also, Dale Earnhardt Jr. is retiring after the season. How will he be remembered if he does not win a championship this year? Great driver, most popular driver, but no championship, no rings, no hardware. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Twitter, DA on CBS. We had Patrick Mahomes in studio with us last hour here on the show. One of the quarterbacks that is likely to be taken early as quarterbacks go in this upcoming NFL draft. And NFL Network is going to provide live coverage of the 2017 draft from Philly Thursday until Saturday. And Daniel Jeremiah has joined us before, friend of the DA show, NFL Network analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at Move the Sticks. Daniel, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing great. I'm out here in Philly. We got a little rain here, but I looked at the forecast. It's like it's supposed to be 80 degrees on Thursday night. Unbelievable.
It's going to heat up when the draft is here. And speaking of Mahomes, how much do you mark down on him for playing in the quote-unquote air raid offense?
Well, I think you got to be, you know, look, the facts are the facts. There's been no way to come out of that system and have long-term success in the NFL. But as we see more and more college teams running this, it is going to happen. Somebody's going to be able to be that first guy. So you can't just eliminate somebody based off the offense they played in. But I think with Mahomes, you pick him, you're going to have a plan in place that doesn't involve him getting on the field anytime soon, because you're going to have to kind of retrain him a little bit. He needs mechanically, just footwork-wise and just kind of playing within a structure of any offense, it's going to be a little bit of time there for him to get to that point. But you fall in love with the arm, no question, and having a chance to visit with him, as I have, I know you have, it's easy to fall in love with a kid and you somebody you definitely want to work with. I just think you got to have a real plan in place that involves a lot of patience.
Why do you think no air raid quarterback has had long-term success?
Well, I think, look, it's a wonderful college offense. I mean, it's obviously the numbers and the yards, the points, all that stuff it puts up is outstanding. It's very simple. It doesn't involve a lot of verbiage. That's been a challenge for some guys, is just coming in and having to swallow all the verbiage you have in a pro-style offense. So that's one challenge. The simplicity of it, one of the things that they're known for is you want to go fast. And one way you can go fast is keep things simple. So you get a lot more complex concepts involved at the next level. And then you also have, you know, a lot of post-snap thinking to take place. A lot of those offenses, your decisions are all made pre-snap by alignment. And then once everything changes post-snap, which is the NFL game where they give you a shell look, and then as soon as the ball snapped, they roll out of it and give you a different look. That's been a challenge for a lot of those guys to adjust to that post-snap thinking, the decisions coming after the ball snapped as opposed to before.
Daniel Jeremiah joins us, NFL Network and NFL.com, to break down the draft. When I hear stories about the Browns not being convinced that Myles Garrett is their number one overall pick, I then look at, is there division inside the franchise where some people think it should be Garrett, others think it should be a guy like Mitch Trubisky? Is there a division inside the Cleveland front office?
Well, look, I have no knowledge of that. I'm not inside that building. I can't say for sure. But the fact that they haven't rallied around Myles Garrett as an organization right now, it seems like the answer to that question is pretty obvious, that they don't seem to all be on the same page here. And it's a little bit baffling to me. I mean, I think there's a real scenario if they want both guys, they could pull it off. I mean, you can take Myles Garrett and you can come back up, and I think you have a good chance to get Trubisky. I'll have to part with some picks, but if you love him that much, then you can find a way to do that. But the challenge is, you know, kind of with an analytics influence there a little bit, is how much value they place on picks. They've been spending so much time collecting all these picks that I don't know that they necessarily want to part with all those. So if that's the thinking, then, you know, maybe they just shock us all and take Trubisky because they don't want to have to part with all those extra picks they have to come back up and get him and live with the, you know, a defensive player they could get at number 12. I don't think that's the right thing to do, but that surely is the debate taking place.
I'm not one to put much stock into Warren Sapp's draft analysis, but I have heard others say what he echoed, and that is that Myles Garrett's production comes in short bunches against inferior teams. Against better teams, he wasn't as productive and didn't take over a full game from start to finish. Do you feel like those are legitimate criticisms of Garrett?
Well, here's the thing. You got to put everything into context. I remember when Leonard Williams was coming out, I remember having a bunch of people, some people put out there that he did not play well against Stanford, and that was an NFL-caliber offensive line. And he didn't dominate the way a player should if he's going to be a top-five pick. So that was what everybody killed him on. Well, it turned out Leonard Williams, if you did your homework, you knew that he had a high ankle sprain before that game, should not have played in the game, and still went out there and gutted it out. And you saw the influence he had when how much double teams and triple teams he commanded. I see the same things from Myles Garrett. He has a high ankle sprain against Arkansas earlier in the year and played through it. And never was 100% healthy. Like the Alabama game, I've heard how Cam Robinson completely dominated him in that Alabama game. Well, I've watched it two or three times. I see Alabama rolling away from him. I see Alabama sending a tight end over there to chip on him. I see him collect multiple pressures in that game. I see them throwing three-step drop because they don't want to sit back in the pocket. I mean, he completely changed their whole game plan. So did he dominate in terms of the box score? No. But he had a big-time impact on the game. He's playing on one leg.
Daniel Jeremiah, NFL.com, NFL Network draft analyst, joining us here on the show. Do you feel like Mitch Trubisky is the best quarterback?
I still have Deshaun Watson as my top quarterback. Now, I definitely think I'll be shocked if Trubisky isn't the first one to go. I think he will be the first quarterback to go. I think he's going to go in the top 10. You know, for me, all these guys have holes. I have Watson as my, I think, 27th overall player, so that's my top quarterback. So that kind of tells you where they stack up with this talented group around them at other positions. But if I had to put my name on one guy, you know, I'd talk about Deshaun Watson's poise, his toughness, his leadership, his football intelligence. I think all that stuff's off the charts. Now, he needs to improve some decision-making, and accuracy is an area he can improve as well. Those are no small details. He's got some work to do there, but you're kind of just betting on him figuring that out. So that's why I have him as my top guy.
Yeah, and I think that I would fall into that same camp, that the things that you can't teach, as you said, leadership, poise, all of those types of things, he just is off the charts great at, and that it moment, that big game moment, that pressure thing, he just totally gets. And sometimes I wonder when I hear that Trubisky is potentially a number one draft pick, the number one overall pick, are we just now in such an analysis stage of stats and measurables that all the stuff that you can't measure is being docked down? Do you think that that's a reality?
No, I think there's something to that. I mean, one thing I'll add on Deshaun Watson, I don't know how many people have even talked about this part about the kid, but his freshman year, he tears his ACL. And so instead of having surgery right away, they play their rival South Carolina the next week. He braces it up. You know, it played the next week and beat their rival as a freshman. He trots out there with a torn ACL, you know, a la Phillip Rivers, and beats South Carolina. I mean, that to me, you know, it just speaks to what kind of kid you're getting here. I mean, this kid is 100% competitive. He's made of the right stuff. And with Trubisky, he may end up being a great player, but I just think it's a lot more projection and guesswork than what you're doing with Watson.
DeShone Kizer made news because A, Brian Kelly said he should have stayed at Notre Dame. B, he says he's got the brain of Tom Brady and the body of Cam Newton. At some point, we know that's hyperbole, but is DeShone Kizer, where does he fit in either he needs to stay or he could be a potential star in your mind?
Well, I totally get why he left. I mean, we can all say that he should have stayed at Notre Dame. I mean, he was getting jerked in and out of the lineup. You want to go back? He got worse from the year before to this year. So I kind of understand, why he wants to get on to the NFL. The thing with the comment about the Tom Brady-Cam Newton combination, it doesn't really bother me. Look, if I had to guess, if you went back and looked at all the great quarterbacks that have come to this league, if you were going to write down on a piece of paper overconfident or underconfident, I think we both know which side they'd fall on.
Yeah, and you've got to sell yourself a little bit, so I totally understand why he would say something like that. I wonder about Leonard Fournette, because Fournette, watching him in college, was one of the great physical beauties, really, that I think we've seen in a long time at running back. And then last year, production took a step back. Now, when you look at him, do you think he can be one of those epic backs that kind of changes the game because of his size and his speed, or do you worry about him?
No, I was around Jamal Lewis for 4 years in Baltimore. I actually was around him for another year in Cleveland, and that's my comparison for him. You talk about Jamal was just so strong and fast. And Jamal was not the most nimble guy in the world, but he was nimble enough to rush for 2,000 yards in a season, and really carry an offense for a handful of years. I think Leonard Fournette can do the exact same thing. I think you commit to him, you give him the ball a bunch, and let him take over. The thing this year, he's another one that had an injury that kind of just played through it. Yeah, I could say maybe he protected himself a little bit here or there, but I've seen enough good tape on him to know what I'm buying. And, one of the big criticisms on him is, I don't know what he does for us in the passing game. He can catch it okay, but he's not a real factor there. Well, you got to remember the fact that if you draft Leonard Fournette, you're going to see nothing but eight-man boxes the whole time. And while he might not be the one catching the football, he's going to have a tremendous impact in the passing game. He's going to free up those guys on the outside one-on-one to do some damage.
That's right. And LSU's passing attack was atrocious the last couple of years. So opposing defense could totally lock down on Leonard Fournette. Do you think that Fournette is head and shoulders above the other running backs in this draft, or is it closer than that?
Well, I mean, I think there's a little bit of a gap between him and the other guys just because I think he's different. What he brings to the table is a little bit different to wear out teams and finish games. But, McCaffrey, to me, is a great player. Dalvin Cook is a great player. They just do it a little bit different. I think those are the clear-cut top three backs, but I do have a little bit of distance between one and two.
Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at MoveTheSticks. NFL Network providing live coverage of the NFL draft from Philly starting on Thursday and right through the weekend on Saturday. Again, follow Daniel on Twitter because he's great this time of year at MoveTheSticks. Daniel, always good to catch up, buddy. Thanks so much.
Thanks, DA. See you, buddy.
Daniel Jeremiah joining us from the NFL Network. Look, I'm with him on Leonard Fournette. If you're going to take a running back, you have to take Leonard Fournette if he's available. He has to be the first running back taken. He has to be. Not only because I think Christian McCaffrey can be good, I think Dalvin Cook could be good, I think Joe Mixon could be good, I don't think any of those three can be Hall of Famers. I think Leonard Fournette could be a Hall of Famer. Not saying he will be. He's the only one with the potential to be a game changer and to just tilt the scale on a football field. I mean, to me, he's like Adrian Peterson and Earl Campbell, that you could just see him ravaging defenses. And I think he did protect himself last year. But also, the LSU passing attack was a joke. It was a high school passing attack. So if you were going to line up against LSU, would you go, okay, eight or nine in the box, single coverage on the outside, maybe a safety, maybe not because they'll never throw downfield. They don't have a quarterback that can do anything. And we just make sure that we lock down on Fournette and we only have to score 16 points to win. When we come back here on the DA show, the Golden State Warriors have a historic night but will it lull people into a false understanding of the Dubs? Junior is retiring at the end of the year. What's his legacy going to be like if he does not win a championship this year? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Open now for brunch.
I'd like to call you George Jefferson. I told you you're moving up.
DA.
We're going to have a night in the day.
On CBS Sports Radio.
Remember, we are now watchable. The entire show is on webcast, so go to watchda.com. And now if you miss it, it's okay, because it just loops forever until the next episode. So like this weekend, we sign off the air at noon on Friday Eastern time. You can watch that episode right through 9 a.m. on Monday. It's great. It's just on loop. It reminds me of the old Sports Center. Just keep watching it over and over again. Like when I'm in junior high and we've got a snow day, I'm waking up. There's no school. Amazing. It's 8 a.m. And I'm watching that same Sports Center at 8, at 8:30, at 9, at 9:30, at 10, at 10:30. So that's what I highly encourage you to do. Just go to the web feed and watch this show on loop for an entire weekend. You'll get more nuances out of it and stuff like that.
They were nuts.
That's at watchda.com. JC is in South Carolina on 100.3, listening to CBS Sports Radio. What's up, JC?
Not much, DA. Hope y'all are having a good day.
Right on, man. What's going on?
You asked what Dale Jr.'s legacy was going to be, and I kind of wanted to harken back to the previous caller. I think Dale Jr. is the last vestige of NASCAR to its predominantly Southern roots. And I think he'll be remembered as the last of kind of the old school Southern NASCAR drivers. But to make another point, I think NASCAR is in serious trouble. They abandoned a lot of their roots. They've moved a lot of traditional races to areas of the country where NASCAR historically hasn't been that popular. They wanted to get away from, I think, being a niche sport in one region of the country. And they're now losing, as the previous caller said, by far their most popular driver. And when you look at, Jeff Gordon leaving and Tony Stewart and now with Dale Jr., I mean, I don't know if if you've watched NASCAR recently, but what you would see would be half-filled tracks.
Totally.
And in places where, they used to get 200,000. I live about an hour from Darlington, and, the races when I was a kid were much more popular than the races now. When you can't get a full crowd at Bristol or Darlington
it's crazy. I agree. So let me ask you, JC, as a NASCAR fan yourself, growing up in the backyard of one of the great NASCAR racetracks, what is it? Because I keep asking NASCAR people to put their finger on what it was. Why, over the last 10 years, has attendance been so bad and the popularity gone down?
I think there's multiple reasons, and I think the first is that many NASCAR fans were alienated when the races started being moved. Rockingham, both races were canceled. North Wilkesboro no longer hosts a NASCAR race, and so I think that a lot of people in this part of the country felt that NASCAR really didn't care about them,
right?
Because they were moving to places that 20 years prior people would have made fun of people who watched NASCAR. So I think that's the first part, but I also think that there's another kind of demographic shift. In 30, 40 years ago, in this part of the country, you didn't have a lot of people who went to college, and I think in when you look at the past 30 years with the progress that the South has made, a lot more people go to college, and instead of the weekends them watching NASCAR, college football is by far
that's
a lot
interesting.
So I think a lot of the people who would have been NASCAR fans 30 years ago, their kids are college football fans because they attended, the University of South Carolina or Clemson or Alabama or Auburn or Georgia. And so college football becomes the predominant kind of sport in the Deep South. So
that's
interesting, JC.
Yeah, those are two actually really good points that you bring up. I was actually on with my friend Tom Abraham on WUMP in Alabama, North Alabama, and I was asking him this question as well the other day because he was bringing up the same thing about Bristol. And he had a really good theory as well, saying that when the economy fell out in 08, people couldn't afford to go to the race anymore. So they started watching on TV. And that coincided with screens getting better, HD getting better, technology getting better. And it retrained an audience that, hey, I don't have to be there. I can get the experience at home where the beer is dirt cheap and I got a bathroom next to me and I don't have to sit in an hour and a half of traffic getting out. And that made a lot of sense to me as well. But it's funny, you know, in 2004, 05, 06, I'm working in Kansas City, and they've opened up the Kansas Motor Speedway. And so we did a lot of stuff with the Kansas Motor Speedway, and they've had great races and great fan base and everything like that, great organizers. And at the time, it was like, well, this is just the next level of NASCAR becoming really, really big. You know, that's at the point in time where TV ratings are surging, popularity of drivers are surging, everybody wants a piece of NASCAR, and that was now 12, 13 years ago. I couldn't imagine at that point in time, and I left KC in 07, the end of 07, beginning of 08, I couldn't imagine at that time that 10 years later, 12 years later, you'd have half-empty stands in some of the most epic races that we have, some of the most epic legendary tracks that we have in NASCAR. It seems startling how dramatic that was. And there's a lot of reasons, I guess, that go into it. But it's a reminder that just because you're super popular as a sport doesn't mean it lasts forever. And the NFL should take note. Last night, the Golden State Warriors put it on the Portland Trailblazers. They nearly led by 30 in the first quarter. But with the ease with which they won, I think it's dangerous to just assume that they don't need Steve Kerr. Beating the Blazers in a game four where you're up 3-0 and you've already demoralized them because they blew a 16-point lead in game three at home is way different than going toe-to-toe with Mike Brown against Greg Popovich in a Western Conference Finals. Way different. And I don't think last night should make anybody believe that coaching is overrated or that Steve Kerr is unnecessary. What I loved from last night's game was Damian Lillard, following the game, who predicted Blazers in six, saying, I don't want to leave. We have to just figure out a way to beat this squad.
You also got to understand that, you know, if you ever want to get out the West, you're going to have to go through them. And for me, I understand that that's what it is. And, you know, it's always been that way in the NBA. I think about, you know, when the Pistons was just beating up on Jordan. And he was just kicking his butt every year. And he had to get through them if he wanted to get to where he wanted to get to. And that's just what it is, because they're going to be here. They're going to be there every year. And we have to look at that and understand that we got to be better. We got to go get better and come back better as a group if we want to move past them.
I love that attitude. I wouldn't blame Damian Lillard if he looks at the Warriors and goes, we're nowhere close to this team. I'm competitive. I'm from Oakland. And the team in Oakland is going to beat my butt. I'm going to put up 34 points. We're going to lose by 20, 25. I wouldn't blame him at all if he got frustrated and said, I got to go to the East. But for him to say, no, we got to get better. Jordan got punked by the Pistons for years. We got to get better. You got to know you got to go through the Warriors, so we got to get better. I respect the hell out of that. I love Damian Lillard. I love that attitude. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Twitter, DA on CBS. When we come back, we've got your cut line, the stories that didn't make the cut this morning, as well as your epic fail. And one of the stories we'll get to is an incredible one of a hockey player who played with, you know, just a general lower body injury, like a torn ACL and MCL. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
My Ruffin's Mornings Mothership.
Hey, D.A., how's it going, man? A toast to you. I'm going to have to trade in my Miller Lite for coffee.
D.A. on CBS Sports Radio.
Sign up to be an O Rewards member today. Start earning instantly. O Rewards members earn $5 back for every 150 points you earn. Fast, easy, free only at O'Reilly Auto Parts. See store for details. O'Reilly, better parts, better prices every day. Pepper tweets in, D.A., I prefer husky petite. That sounds like an oxymoron. Can we use husky and petite in the same description of somebody? Is that proper?
Bart Scott was calling me skinny fat for a little bit.
That's true. Skinny fats or skinny fat?
I think it was just skinny fat. I don't remember the S on the end of it.
Why were you nicknamed Skinny Fat?
Well, we were just going through a whole thing, best nicknames for me on the street.
Like best block nicknames.
Best block, like he could yell out, booby, at me. And yeah. Then he said Skinny Fat was a good one, too.
Skinny Fat. Bill tweets in, when people call others skinny, and I suggest that may be offensive, they respond with thin. Is that a compliment? Perspective matters. I don't know. I mean, calling somebody skinny is rarely anything but a compliment, right?
You know what? I never see the world through skinny
person. Sure, you've never
bones.
Heard anybody say that you're skinny.
But now that I would love to be called that one day. It's not as offensive as fat, because if you're fat, you want to be called skinny. But I could imagine that. Thin sounds nicer than skinny. Skinny sounds like you need to eat a little bit.
Okay. All right. So thin sounds still healthy. Skinny sounds maybe malnourished.
Thin is to skinny as chubby is to fat. You want to hear thin just like you want to hear chubby. You don't want to hear fat and skinny.
Okay, got it. Xanadu tweets, D.A., ask Mraz where Portly ranks.
Portly is very, it's almost like hearing somebody named Barbara or Nancy. Like, you know what I mean? It's very,
it's outdated.
It's outdated. Like, it's very rare there's a baby named Barbara. It's very rare you hear somebody called Portly anymore.
Okay. So, are we okay with it, though?
I think I'm okay with it. Listen, just like traditional throwback uniforms. If you're going to use a throwback disc, I'm all for it.
So, basically, what we're talking about is fat's the worst.
Even if you're fat.
Can't use that. Everything else, relatively acceptable. However, we believe Porky will eventually be seen as offensive.
Yes, like the Chief Wahoo logo, 2027, Porky no longer available.
Okay. Jonesy tweets in, on a trash Tuesday, I want to trash the Minnesota Wild for underachieving once again. Minnesota is the capital of hockey in the U.S., but we simply can't win.
Taking out the trash.
I was disappointed by that. I really was, because number one, the Twin Cities never deserved to have their original hockey team, the North Stars, move out. Okay, then the North Stars go through all the losing of Minnesota. They move to Dallas and immediately win a Stanley Cup, which is exactly like the Quebec Nordiques moving to Colorado and the Avalanche winning cups. It's just like the Hartford Whalers moving to Carolina and the Hurricanes winning cups. It's just ridiculous. Like, all of these old-school hockey towns lost, dealt with losers forever, lost their teams, and then their new place, they ended up winning. And remember also, Mraz, we had this run of Cinderella Canadian teams to make the Stanley Cup Finals, and they all lost to Sun Belt squads. You had the Calgary Flames that lost.
Yeah, in 93, the Canadians beating the Canadians losing to
the Kings. They beat the Kings.
Oh, they beat the Kings. Right. Never
That's
mind.
The last Canadian team to win a Stanley Cup.
Right.
But you had the Flames lose in the Stanley Cup Finals. You had the Ottawa Senators lose in the Stanley Cup Finals.
They lost to the Ducks. The Oilers lost to the Hurricanes.
Right. And then you had the Calgary Flames. I say that already?
Yes.
The Flames, the Oilers, the Senators all made to the Stanley Cup Finals, and they all lost to Sun Belt squads.
Just not the way hockey's meant to be.
I mean, seriously, like, the hockey gods have moved teams out of traditional hockey areas, plopped them in Raleigh and Los Angeles and Dallas and Phoenix and Denver, and said, now you guys get all the cups.
Just like if the Predators beat the Senators this year in a cup, who deserves it more than Nashville?
I mean, Ottawa lost its team for like 70 years, had to wait to get it back. In Cleveland, they only had to wait like 2 years to get the Browns back. Ottawa waited like 70 to get the Senators back. But so anyway, Minnesota losing the North Stars, then getting the Wild, And the Wild, and that building is amazing. The fans are amazing. It's so loud. They're so passionate. They love high school hockey. They love college hockey. They love the Wild. The Wild finally look like they could break through, get to a Stanley Cup Finals, and they flame out in the first round and barely give a peep.
I am the epic fail.
Awful. Minnesota hockey fans deserve better than that. I know that. Let's bring you your cut line.
These stories were left out by the selection committee. Cut from their high school team. The news that didn't make the show. It's the cut line.
Speaking of hockey, you want the ultimate hockey story? Jumbo Joe Thornton, who after his exile from the Boston Bruins was mocked and ridiculed because he was big, he was talented, but he was soft. He was like the Dwight Howard of the NHL. Couldn't get it done when it mattered. Wasn't a great leader. Was given all these tremendous physical gifts and couldn't make the most out of it. Now, Jumbo Joe goes to the Stanley Cup Finals the other year, last year with the San Jose Sharks, but it was years of them underperforming, underachieving. Well, Joe Thornton played in the playoffs this year with a torn ACL and MCL in his left knee. Think about that. The guy has played in the playoffs on a torn ACL and a torn MCL. He's 37 years old and skated in the Stanley Cup playoffs with a torn ACL and a torn MCL. His coach, Peter DeBoer, said basically his knee is floating there. It was as courageous an effort as I've ever seen, and I never saw a drop in his game. Forget Jumbo Joe can't get it done. Jumbo Joe is this, Jumbo Joe is that. That's just ridiculous. The guy played on a torn MCL and ACL in the playoffs.
So sorry, you've been cut.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Is it time to check in with the one and only Tim Tebow? Tim Tebow went 6-for-21 last week. Doesn't sound great, but it means that he hit .286, had 2 walks, 5 strikeouts over 6 games, which means his batting average is now .218. He still has those 2 home runs. So now the question becomes, is he actually improving? And he probably is. Is he going to improve to becoming a .300 hitter or mashing home runs regularly? No. This is still some huge kind of educational arc learning curve for him. So to expect him to become some type of legit stud minor league baseball player to get promoted to the major leagues is, again, not going to happen. Talked about this before. Could he become a double-A player? Yeah. But he's going to peter out there because there's no way at 29 years old he's going to pick up and start learning how to become a Major League Baseball hitter and learn off-speed stuff and learn how to read pitchers and learn how to hit all types of different pitches when you are 29 and they're throwing 99. Not going to happen. But the Fireflies' attendance is up 2,000 fans per game. They're a good draw. So if you're around Columbia, South Carolina, go see the Fireflies. And if he's coming to your hometown, see Tim Tebow.
So sorry, you've been cut.
Thank you. Goodbye.
And on that note, that the Mets could promote Tebow to high class A, because right now he's in low class A. Just a little reminder. There's 2 class A's. He's still in the lower class A, and he's still hitting .218. And finally, sad story coming from Beijing. No, don't worry. Nobody's dead. But Stephon Marbury is no longer wanted. The Beijing Ducks, where Stephon Marbury has become an absolute legend, are not re-signing him. Which now we wonder, if there's no Beijing Ducks and he's 40 years old, where does he land? He landed with the CBA, the Chinese Basketball Association, in 2009. So he's been there almost a decade now. He's won championships. He's got a statue named after him. But he's even got a museum, apparently. But because he pulled a hamstring and he's that old, they don't want the deal anymore. So I don't know what happens to Stephon Marbury, but I will say this.
Quack.
If you could have named every player in the NBA in 2000 and let's say 4 or 5, in the middle of Stephon Marbury tossing away his great career because he had friction with coaches, was lazy, was uninterested, was a distraction, was a cancer in the clubhouse. If you could have listed all of the NBA players in the league at that time to me and said one of these players will become a deity overseas, one of these players will have a statue built of him in China, one of these guys will win a championship and become the Michael Jordan of another international league, I guarantee you Stephon Marbury would have been the last guy on my list. There is no more shocking outcome of a guy's career than Stephon Marbury landing in China and liking it. And then liking it so much that they love him. And doing so well, he wins titles. And as a statue. And as sneaker brands. And as a museum. Nothing is as shocking to me as Stephon Marbury going to China and loving it.
Quack.
And them loving him back. What? How could you have ever figured?
So sorry, you've been cut.
Thank you. Goodbye.
All right, that's your cut line today. So we here on the DA show are transparent. If things don't go well, we're not going to tell you, oh, they went great. I'm not going to lie to you. I am critical. I'm self-critical. I'm self-analytic. We go back, we watch the film after shows. We sit down, we watch the film. Run it again. Mraz going out to break. Run it again. Bilotti, we got to be better with the sounder. Run it again. Bogish, the update's got to be tighter. Run it again. We watch the film. We break our ass. We got two-a-days. Run it again. And today, I take this one. Because I tried to get Patrick Mahomes, Texas Tech quarterback, to blow Major League Baseball bubbles with us because the guy was going to be a first-round MLB draft pick. And I chose poorly. I chose Big League Chew.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
So how much is like a good amount?
Oh, I got a lot.
We're chewing bubble gum with Big League Chew with Patrick Mahomes. So the key is like a good between both fingers, right? That's like a good amount.
I gotta take some out. All right, we're good now.
You have to suck any juice out of it to get a good bubble density?
You gotta get it nice and flat.
Yeah.
All right.
Grab flat. I got the icky, sticky, ooey, ooey bubble gum. What kind of chewing is going on?
I'm using my tongue, flatten it out.
Whereas, do you like bubble gum?
I love bubble gum. You just can't blow bubbles. He's blowing bubbles.
You know, yeah, I took too much, too.
I just put it under the desk. Who's going to notice?
I'm going to take it in a good bubble.
What is that you're doing? Go, like, sticking your tongue
I'm
out.
Just trying to... What's the idea here? You blow air into the gum?
Oh. Yeah, you got to kind of, like, spray it with your tongue and then kind of just blow the air underneath your tongue.
You're just spitting it.
I'm just getting, like, a purple tongue out of it.
Just buy a pouch of Big League Chew.
This is not the best bubble blowing gum.
Oh, no, not at all. But
What's better than this? I thought Big League Chew was the best.
What's the little one that's like twisted?
Double bubble. This is bad bubble blowing gum.
I got nothing. I just got purple goo. I think I'm a lost cause.
So you
got
to lay it flat, put it over your tongue.
I can't get a little bubble. Nothing big.
Yeah.
It has been 35 years since the brand Big League Chew stepped up to the plate.
Mraz is spitting this up right now.
It's just one of those things. I'm never going to be able to blow a bubble. If Patrick Mahomes can't teach me, I can't teach me.
Yeah, you know what? I messed up this whole thing because this is the worst bubble gum. This is not bubble blowing bubble gum.
And in the time since, it has become the bubble gum of almost every person's childhood.
I should have gotten the double bubble.
Well,
I had a little baby bubble going, but that's ball off to you.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
We are going to post that video on our Facebook page of us trying to blow a bubble with Patrick Mahomes. And I'm going to tell you this right now. Two things, Mraz. Number one, I desperately hope Patrick Mahomes becomes a star, Hall of Famer, Pro Bowl, Super Bowl quarterback, because we can then say, remember when he was laughing giddy because Mraz couldn't blow a bubble in studio.
Anything that's good for the show, and that's great for the show.
That's a great drop that we would have forever. Number two, as you just pointed out, why did we forget to ask him whether he would have pulled the Aaron Rodgers card on you and said, get away from me, bro, like Rodgers did to you in Phoenix?
Get away from me, buddy.
Get away from me, buddy.
If that would have been the perfect question to ask him and really set him up. Hey, you're big in 5 years. Let's say you're winning MVPs. Are you telling me to get away from you, buddy, if I present a half-nude picture of myself?
It's a fair question, guys. It really
itchy
is.
Itchy nipple chub, bro.
It's a fair question.
So many different emotions on so many different levels.
I like Mahomes a lot. I'm excited that we had him here in studio on Thursday, his first round of the draft. So listen to it right here on CBS Sports Radio. Gio and Jones are going to anchor the coverage, but we will have full breakdown Friday morning beginning at 9 a.m. Eastern time to go down all of week one, or day one rather, night one of the draft. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to Pete the Body Bellotti on the Wheels of Steel and Brad Heller on your headlines. We're back at it tomorrow, boys and girls. Be good and be good to one another. I'm DA and the Mothership disconnects.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.